Welcome to the Overcoming Financial Trauma Podcast. It's time to remove guilt, shame, and fear from conversation around your money, mindset, and mission. Let's normalize these conversations. Here's your host, financial coach and consultant, Rakim Sabri.
What's going on, guys? Rakim Sabri here. And if you enjoy this podcast, you'll love my weekly newsletter. Overcoming Financial Trauma is a weekly newsletter that comes out Friday mornings at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I discuss all things financial trauma. Subscribe at rakimsabri.substack.com. That's rakimsabre.substack.com. There are three subscription tiers. One is free, one is paid, and one is a founding member. If you go on over to the website, you can see the benefits associated with each tier. But if you decide to subscribe for free, that's okay too. Again, that's rakimsabri.substack.com. And I'll see you guys in the comments. Welcome to another episode of Overcoming Financial Trauma. I'm your host, Rakim Sabri, and I have a special guest with us today, Melanie Lockhart. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here and chatting with you today.
Yeah, this is like a full circle moment because I was on your podcast not too long ago. And really, I think that was the beginning of my pivot into talking about financial trauma. So for the audience that does not know you, why don't you introduce yourself, your background, your podcast, definitely plug up your podcast and your book, and we can jump right into this.
Yeah, perfect. Well, first of all, I wanted to say that your episode on my podcast, The Mental Health and Wealth Show, was one of the top listened to podcasts. It was very popular. So it was such an informative, wonderful, refreshing episode. So definitely people check it out. So I am the host of the Mental Health and Wealth Show podcast. I am the founder of the blog and the author of the book, Dear Debt. And I paid off $81,000 in student loans. So basically, I borrowed a bunch of money to go to undergrad and graduate school. A big chunk of that came from NYU, which is a fancy private school in New York, for a pretty worthless degree called performance studies. You know, I've gotten a lot of trolling and people being like, why would you spend that much money on going to school? Well, to make a long story short, I initially wanted to be a professor. To be a professor, you typically need a PhD. And halfway through the program, I realized that academia was not for me, but obviously I wasn't going to just quit a master's program when I had all that debt. I was like, let me at least walk away with the master's degree. So that's kind of what happened, is I had a bigger plan. The plan changed. I, you know, walked away with all of this debt, $81,000 in student loan debt in total, probably with interest, was probably closer to 100,000, but, you know, from basic accounting, it was definitely 81,000. And, you know, I had all these dreams about how my life would change after going to NYU and having a master's degree. And it was in 2011, kind of a few years after the Great Recession. And my life just did not turn out the way that I thought. I could not find a job in New York. I, you know, was working these part-time jobs, but it was not sufficient to have full-time work, full-time income. I could not afford to continue living in New York and pay my student loans. So then I moved to Portland, Oregon. My previous partner was living there at the time, so it kind of made sense romantically and financially at the time. And I was like, oh, things will be better there. No, they were not. I only could find temp jobs making $10 to $12 an hour there. And then, you know, I ended up on food stamps because I was like, these numbers are not working in my favor and I really need financial assistance. And you know, you have this idea of what your life will look like after making such a drastic move to take on so much debt, to go to get your master's, and then to be like, I'm making the least amount of money that I ever have. I'm the brokest I've ever been. And now I'm on food stamps, something I didn't think I would do. And it was just, it set me into a tailspin for about a year. I was just so depressed, so anxious. I was like, this is not the life I signed up for. This is not the life that I want. And pretty much after a year of crying, going to therapy, having anxiety attacks, I was like, something has to change. And I discovered personal finance blogs. And I loved them. And I was like, wow, this is so inspirational. People are talking about their real life debt stories. And I thought, maybe I can create my own blog. And so I started my blog January 3rd, 2013, almost 10 years ago, which is wild. And my life completely changed because of this blog. And I eventually did pay off my debt a few years later. I started a new career in personal finance writing, in financial media. And that's the long and short of it. That's basically the premise of, you know, my debt story.
And I think, you know, I don't want us to skirt past it, because paying off that much debt on a W-2 income is a feat in and of itself, but paying off that much debt on freelance income is a completely different beast. And as I've gotten kind of more immersed in the world of freelancing, and I've rubbed elbows with other freelancers, I know that it can be very difficult to identify gigs, especially gigs within maybe your niche area of specialization, or within the dollar amount that you feel like you deserve. But then beyond that, to continue to drive that, to live off of, and then also be able to pay off a chunk of debt like that. So kudos to you. And that was really how we got acquainted, like through finding out about your blog, finding out about your podcast. And I think, you know, you cover a needed space in personal finance, right? This merging of mental health and money. And the conversations that very often, you know, the professionals, the influencers, and even, you know, the end users don't have when it comes to like what's happening behind the scenes, what's happening behind the curtain with our mental health when we're trying to accomplish these goals, or we're trying to climb out of a mess, or we're trying to redirect from a direction that maybe we thought we were going to go. And I guess like you're one of the OGs, right? Like you're one of the people that started talking about this stuff. And I'm starting to see more content, mine included, that marry this idea of money and mental health, and, you know, the different manifestations that shows up in, whether that be from a place of, okay, this is how I feel as a human being interacting with money, or from a more clinical perspective in what identifying, navigating financial trauma or financial therapy looks like. So in the time on your journey as a blogger, as a podcaster, as a freelancer, what would you say, you talked about the pros, right? Being able to pay off that debt and certainly being able to sustain yourself for almost a decade in the field. What would you say some of the cons were or are from a mental health perspective in that kind of environment?
Oh, absolutely. So first of all, as you mentioned, I've been a full-time freelancer and self-employed for 8.5 years. So I got very lucky. And I just want to touch a little bit on your previous point about how I paid off debt and how I made this sustainable, because they're both kind of related. So I really focused on networking in the community when I first started freelancing, because I was like, I need clients, I need gigs, I need to know how to do this. I was doing random side hustles before freelance writing. I was pet sitting, I was being a brand ambassador, I was an event assistant for people's parties on TaskRabbit. I worked a overnight rave selling water bottles, like at a warehouse, like pretty much anything that I could do that someone would pay me for, I would do. And then I thought, wow, people are getting paid right from the comfort of their home. I have a master's degree. I wrote a lot of papers in school. Perhaps that could help me. And so I got interested in writing that way. And I had a friend of mine who, she had a freelance financial writing business. And then she got a job at a publication and they had a non-compete, meaning you can't have clients anymore. And so she referred me to all of her clients. And basically from one day to the next, I went from one client to four because of her referrals. So that was a big game changer for me that helped me even begin to do this full time. I had the right connection. It was the right time, the right place. I went from one client to four overnight, simply based on her referral, because she was getting back into kind of a quote 9 to 5, right? So that was amazing. And then also, self-employment actually did earn me far more money than the nonprofit sector. So I did eventually find a job making $30,000. And then through self-employment, that first year I made $60,000. And then at that time in Portland, Oregon, I was sharing a studio apartment and paying $425 in rent or so. So just some context about the numbers and how I made it work. But back to your point about the cons of freelancing and the cons of this weird career. So I remember the first couple of years, I had absolutely no boundaries. I was working all the time. I was taking any and all gigs that came my way. So I was writing $25 blog posts for friends. I was writing SEO drivel for like $30. Like, I was working all the time. And so, you know, the first year or two, I could not say no to people. I was working all the time. I had no boundaries, you know, and that takes a toll on your mental health. Like, one thing that I have learned very much about my mental health is that if I do not have a buffer of time for myself where I can just have that freedom to do what I want, if I feel like every minute of my day is accounted for me already, my mental health is going in the trash. Like, it just is. And so that was one of the things that happened, is I was just like, all of my minutes and days are accounted for me. And so one of the toughest lessons I had to learn early on in freelancing is, I was like, wait, I quit my nonprofit job with one boss, and now I feel like I have 10 bosses. And I, you know, had this like feeling of, I feel like I didn't do this right. And so probably about a year into it, I like was running the numbers, and I was like, I'm never going to make what I really need to be making writing $25 to $50 blog posts. Like, it's just not sustainable. Like, I'll have to be writing, you know, 4 to 6 articles a day, which just is not possible for me. And then I kind of realized, oh, these are the types of publications that pay. So I had to pivot from writing for other blogs and bloggers to financial publications. Because they have a bigger budget, right? And then, of course, there are downsides to that. It's easier to write for other blogs and bloggers. There are typically no revisions. It might be able to be cranked out in an hour or two, you know, but then you have the higher paying gigs. It might take 3 to 7 hours of research, writing, editing, revisions. And so there's, you know, pros and cons of that. But, you know, really having boundaries, being able to say no. Like, about a year in, I basically had to fire all of my low-paying clients and start all the way over, because I just knew, like, you can't go to someone and be like, I'm doubling or tripling my rate and expect them to like stick around. So I was like, I just have to start over and focus on different clients, right? And so that was difficult. Obviously, the managing of my time, you know, when you're getting micromanaged by a boss and there's someone over your shoulders literally all the time, it's very easy to stay on task because you're like, I'm being watched. But when you're home and you're like, no one's watching me, I can just go take a bath right now, I can go take a nap, like, no one's going to do anything. It took me quite a long time to get that internal motivation to work and get started and have that accountability. So, you know, and there was also a lot of imposter syndrome, like, who am I to be doing this? Like, I don't know anything about finance except that I figured it out myself. Like, are people going to realize that I'm a fake? Am I a phony? Like, so many emotions to deal with in that first couple of years of self-employment. And, you know, even though I've gotten over a lot of those things 8.5 years in, you know, your problems never go away. There's that saying, new level, new devil. That's where I'm at now. New level, new devil. I have different demons now to tackle.
Yeah, you know, first of all, I love the transparency, because not a lot of people get into the weeds of what that looks like. But you said something that I think is worth repeating around the buffer and your timing, right? So, you know, I've been on this 100% freelance contractor independent life for about 1.5 years now. And there's so much information out there about high performance, goal setting, waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning and taking the cold shower, you know, that whole like rhetoric that says that your day needs to be structured and planned out down to the T in order for you to perform at the highest of levels. And I think a lot of people, myself included, run into this wall when they're trying to accomplish that, because not everybody functions that way. And I've learned too that, to your point, if my day is overly structured, then I will end up being less productive than if I have variability in the way that I can approach certain tasks, or choose not to approach certain tasks within a certain day because of, you know, listening to my body or listening to my mind. So I think that that's so important that in the same breath as we hear about your successes financially in this space, we also hear about the truth and what structured time looks like. So thank you for that.
Of course. Yeah. And I just want to, you know, say something about that. Like, I used to feel like, oh, I should do these routines that you hear about as well to be the most successful ever. And I just realized that absolutely does not work for me, because I think it's really important for people to understand, A, why they became self-employed and what they're getting out of it and what's the core motivation to continue with that lifestyle. And for me, the core motivation was, I don't want to be at a certain place at a certain time if I don't have to. Like, the number one thing that I love about self-employment is 99% of the time I sleep without an alarm. And that makes me incredibly happy. Obviously, with the pandemic, many more people are working from home now. Like, I've been working from home for the past 8.5 years, and that was a rarity before the pandemic. You know, obviously now a lot more people are working from home. So part of me is like, oh, that's taken away from me, because now even 9-to-5ers get that. But I still say I have more flexibility. I can sleep without an alarm. I don't have to be somewhere at 9 a.m. showing up on Zoom, right? So to me, that flexibility is one of my core values and core motivations of being self-employed. So a strict schedule or regimen like that will not work for me. It will make me miserable. So what I have found that works for me, instead of having like at 5 a.m., I'm going to wake up and take a cold shower and do this, like that doesn't work for me. I have what I call mental health guardrails. And, you know, they are specific sets of tools that I try to do every day based on my energy whenever I feel like it, as long as I get a few of them in per day. So like, for example, before this, I went on one of my mental health walks. I go on a 40-minute to an hour walk because I know getting my body moving and outside first thing gets me away from my phone, away from the computer, just get some movement and sunlight into my eyes. On another mental health guardrail is meditation, reading for 20 minutes, Duolingo, sometimes a nap. So I don't have a specific time that I have to do any of these things. It's just like, you know, some point during the day, oh, I'm feeling tired, let's take a nap. Oh, like I need a break, let's read for 20 minutes. So these are my mental health guardrails that I try to implement as much as possible day to day, but I don't have like, I have to do it in this order or I have to do it at this time. It's just like, these are the things that I know keep me healthy and safe and well, and I do them as I can. You know, some days I do all of them. Some days I just do the walk because that's really all I can afford time-wise. But I at least, you know, have that regimen of like, these are the things that make me feel good and balanced, and mental health guardrails, you know, keeping me in the lane before, you know, getting off the rails, as they say. So that's what I try to do for myself.
Yeah, thank you for that. Mental health guardrails, I'm gonna use that in the future. So we talked briefly about the financial trauma of, let's call it hustling, right? And what overcorrecting looks like. So can you, you know, just for the sake of this conversation, talk us through how you came to that conclusion, the overcorrecting conclusion, and what does that look like?
Yeah, so, you know, I feel like when I started this journey, there was the financial trauma of being deeply in debt, student loan debt, There was the financial trauma of getting on food stamps. I mean, if you've ever applied for public assistance, it's very humiliating, you know, going to the office, filling out the paperwork, them having looking at all of your documentation. You're just like, wow, I'm giving you every private bit of information possible. And I definitely need you more than you need me. And like, you know, there is a kind of financial trauma in that, especially if you've never had to deal with that kind of world or that kind of assistance before, or you never saw yourself being in that position. So that was a very humbling part of my life. And so, you know, then there was the financial trauma of like, I have to get out of this. I have to hustle, hustle, hustle. And I became the side hustle queen. I was side hustling all the time. That parlayed into self-employment. I've been doing that for so long. I did pay off my debt December 2015. So I've been debt-free for 7 years now. And then just now, you know, 8.5 years into self-employment, almost 10 years after starting the blog, I'm in a financial and mental health position where I'm relatively stable, relatively relaxed, which is a privilege, I know. And I know I wouldn't have had this epiphany if I were not in that place, where I've realized I have overcorrected from this financial trauma. And what I mean by that is, you know, typically we have certain things that happen to us and we either kind of react towards that thing or away from that thing, right? And we see this a lot with, like, let's say our family, for example. Sometimes we're like the spitting image of our family, or we're like, I don't want to be anything like my family, right? It's like we're either the same or we're moving completely against, right? And so I think for a lot of us who've gone through these incredibly painful financial experiences, we have that rock bottom moment where we're like, I'm never getting in this position ever again, right? And you make this promise to yourself, I will never be in this position again. And I believe it. I believe I will never be in that position again. And I feel like I have the receipts to show that I will never be in that position again. And I've done, quote, the work to make that not happen again. But then when you've hustled so hard, you've leaned into this one thing that is financially lucrative, I think there can be a point of overcorrection. And that's something that I've realized lately, because I am having this like weird kind of existential career crisis, in the sense where I'm like, do I want to continue writing about money? Do I want to continue talking about money? Do I have anything left to say? Like, have I only been wanting to talk about money the past 10 years because I've been traumatized by it? Like, what was my life like before? Before, my life was studying the arts. I was working in arts education with children. It was very rewarding. I was working in community with people. I actually did feel like I was making a difference. One of the things that I do want to talk about self-employment is 99% of people are lurkers on blogs, on podcasts. So it's like, am I making a difference? I don't know. I don't hear from that many people. And granted, I know if you're like super popular, have a million followers, maybe you are getting that feedback. That's great. But I think a lot of us indie creators who maybe aren't as big, we're not getting that immediate feedback of comments, feedback, reviews, and it can be very isolating. And so I'm kind of in that phase where I'm like, am I making a difference? Is it worth it? Am I just replicating the financial system that screwed me over to begin with? And am I just replicating this very white, heteronormative, patriarchal financial institution, which really doesn't stand within any of my values? And so it's like, I'm just kind of dealing with all of that right now. And I'm being very raw and honest, in the sense that I don't have the answers. I don't know what I want to do next. I don't know if I want to pivot. I don't know like where I'm going. I don't have like the answers, but that's where I'm at right now, because I'm just in a place right now with my finances, my life, my career, where I'm like, is this really what I want to be doing? Is this what I want to continue to talk about? And then you have that kind of looking back, right? Where you're just like, this is what I've been doing for the past 10 years, but what was I going to school for? What was I passionate about before? And it's like, I haven't done theater in years. I haven't been in community work in years. And now I'm craving that. I'm hungry for it. And maybe part of it's from the pandemic, you know, being very isolated. I don't know. It could be a whole host of factors. And, you know, also on that note, like, I think many of us are having existential crises related to the pandemic because our mortality is in our face. We're more isolated than ever. We're craving community in a new way. So there could be a whole host of factors that are, you know, related to this. But I'm just in a new position where I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I've overcorrected so much from where I was. I found something that would pay me, would value me. And then, you know, you kind of get into the deeper like mental health stuff of it. And it's like, am I just chasing money as validation? Am I just chasing these titles or these quote successes? And I will tell you, as someone who's written a book, who's planned a successful event, who's had a blog and a podcast, you know, yes, that feels good in the moment, but it's not going to solve your problems. If you have a deep hunger within you that cannot be filled in a concrete way, for a long-lasting way, this stuff will make you feel good for 48 hours, and then you're going to be chasing the next thing, right? And so I'm kind of in that position now where I'm like, I'm done chasing these things. I feel like I've achieved a lot and I'm happy about that. I don't regret this time. But what does the next 10 years look like? I don't know. But I just find it fascinating because I know you and your work have talked a lot about financial trauma. And, you know, I think there is this financial trauma around being in debt and being broke and wanting to be self-sufficient. But then you can overcorrect where you abandon all of your values and all the things that made you feel alive before. And actually, I want to share on this podcast today too. And I think I had this realization about a month ago. So I was interviewed for a different podcast about a month ago. And I think it was the first time I might have shared it, which is completely wild to me, but there are various many reasons why I probably had not shared it before. But the podcast host was asking me, like, what made you, she was like, you studied theater and now you're into money? Like, how did this happen? And that was kind of the thing that made me realize, like, oh yeah, like maybe I did overcorrect here. And she was like, what made you interested? Like, what was the event that changed your life that like, and of course it was the debt, being broke, food stamps. That was one of them. But also another one is that when I was 14 years old, my father lost his job. And unfortunately, he didn't find another one. He kind of retired early, but not in the sense that we talk about in finance, right? And I saw my mom take care of him and our family. And, you know, there's that worry of like, can one income support three people? What does that mean if my mom's not here, or will there be enough, right? And so that was definitely a defining moment in my money mindset, in my financial trauma of like, things can change. You always have to be able to support yourself. And, you know, I think I had internalized that as like, I always want to be self-sufficient. I always want to take care of myself, right? And yeah, there's so much complicated and nuanced stuff there that could be a topic of a different podcast. But, you know, talking about financial trauma, I think there are things that happen when we grow up and then also as adults. And like I said, those two defining moments, my father losing his job, And just like that shifting what money and careers look like and stability, you know, and then also my own experience, because I think what had happened when I became broke and on food stamps, like, I mean, I know it sounds bad, but I was like, I don't ever want to be like that, you know, like I can't rely on another person. I can't do that. And so I overcorrected to be like, I'm never going to be that. And so we're we're moving so far away to be like, I'm never being that. But then you're like, you don't even have the presence of mind or the clarity or the time or space or money to be like, what is it that I want? It's not that I don't want that, but it's what is it that I want? So I'm kind of in that space now where it's like, clearly I've just been like, I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want that. But just because you don't want that doesn't mean you necessarily do want that, right? Like, I'm in that space now where I'm like, what is it that I actually want for me that's not just a reaction or an overcorrection to trauma, right? And this is something that's boggled my mind because I think about it for so many people. Like, so many of the defining moments in our lives are a reaction or an overcorrection to trauma. And obviously, it can lead to great things. It can lead to success and motivation and whatever. And like, obviously, I'm not going to downplay or say that's bad. But then it also makes me sad deep down because I'm like, but what do we really want? Like, what would we have wanted if that never happened to us? You know what I'm saying?
100%. I think, you said a lot. And one of the things that I kind of held on to as I was listening to you was that you have just maybe given another creator the vocabulary to articulate why they're in this space, right? I think creators get into sharing their story solely for the intention or the purpose of sharing their journey, right? And they get an audience along the way, and their audience, you know, validates their experience by liking, by sharing, by commenting, what have you. And it's very easy to slip and fall into this role of influencer without necessarily setting out to be like a financial influencer. And then you have a population of people who get into this work because they love this work. And so they become an influencer very intentionally, but they're coming at it from a very methodic or clinical or academic perspective instead of using their life experience to connect with the experiences of other people. And somewhere along the line, like, we form this community, right? Where we're just kind of the clashing of the worlds. We're sharing ideas, we're sharing concepts, we're sharing our beliefs and our experiences. And then it becomes like, well, everybody is doing this thing, right? I've talked to a lot of people who started their platforms on the basis of eliminating debt. And I've talked to a lot of people who started their platforms because they wanted to teach financial education. And then I've met like this small group of people who realize that financial influencing or finfluencing is a lucrative career path. And so they said, well, let me jump on that bandwagon and start making money through being a finfluencer. And so that's a dangerous place to be, I think, for all of us, because there's a lot of misinformation out there tied into very large audiences. There's a lack of maybe passion and enthusiasm behind the work for some people. And then you as an individual who truly wants to share your journey or who truly wants to educate is up against the competing attention for people who are doing it for that reason. So I think it's important for all of us to kind of take a step back and say, well, why are we doing this thing? What do we want to get out of this thing? Who are we doing it for? Are we doing it for ourselves with an audience? Or are we looking to build audience so that we can solve a problem for them? The second thing that I thought while I was listening to you was that that overcorrection that you talked about sounds like the exchange of one trauma for another, right? So we have the financial trauma of experiencing poverty or experiencing a job loss or experiencing a tremendous amount of debt, wanting to overcome that trauma and move into a place where, you know, to your point, we're hustling, we're saving, we're doing everything that we can to make money, but we're consumed by putting so much distance in between ourselves and that previous version or that previous experience we had, that then becomes the trauma. And so I've been exploring this concept lately of financial hoarding, where people, you know, on paper, like you said, it's socially acceptable because like, oh, you're saving 50, 60, 70% of your income. That's wonderful. But when we inspect kind of like the behind the scenes, what's happening or the trauma that is motivating that behavior, we realize some people are doing it just for the sake of this idea of security because, to your point, they're trying to put distance between that experience and not because that's actually what they want to do or because it gives them pleasure or fulfillment. So I think that's really my draw and my fascination with financial psychology as a whole and financial therapy and specifically financial trauma, because there can be all of the boxes checked off, right? On paper that says, oh, I have a high credit score, I have access to high limits, I have the real estate, I have the stocks, I've paid off all my debt, I'm saving a large percentage of my income, and we're still struggling with some kind of trauma internally that is driving these quote unquote positive behaviors and robbing us of an experience or a level of fulfillment, to your point, that maybe we would pursue under different circumstances. So again, I think, you know, you hit several nails on the head, but I think most importantly, you've given people the vocabulary to really articulate what it is that they're going through or that they have gone through. I often kind of sit back and think like, is this the space that I want to be in forever? Do I want to talk about money all the time? Like, am I really dedicating this to be my life's work? And one of the things that I struggled with, I would say maybe a year and a half to 2 years ago, was this whole concept of like pivoting. Am I allowed to grow? Am I allowed to talk about other things besides personal finance? Or does everything that I put out there have to tie back into this theme? And I gave advice to a young person in this space now who's up and coming as a content creator. And I said, when you're doing this work, like, allow yourself the room to grow. Not necessarily pivot, I don't like that word so much, but to evolve. Because what you accomplished at one stage in this process is still valid. It doesn't go anywhere because you decided that you wanted to move on to something else. Maybe financial education and the content that you create in that space allows for you to secure a committed audience or community, and then they will better appreciate whatever else it is that you have to offer. And so for me, that looked like coming in as a generalist and talking about financial literacy in the way that most of us do, right? After reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad or whatever other books are out there, and then getting very specific or very niche in the delivery of my content to say, okay, there are enough people out there talking about the basics of financial literacy. Now I want to talk about financial empowerment, or now I want to talk about financial trauma and how does financial trauma act as a barrier to feeling financially empowered. And it's been a beautiful journey, and I'm digging my heels in and getting these like certifications and designations that justify my presence in the space. But I think to your point, it's always going to be a thing of, is this what I really wanted to do? How did I get into this space? I mean, I think about my first encounters with the industry in banking at 21 years old. That was an accident. Like, I didn't plan on being a banker. I just needed a job and I applied for one. But, you know, just kind of thinking about, well, what if I did something else? Like, what if I went to medical school, right? Like, that was a goal of mine. What if I went to medical school and I became a doctor? Like, would I still have this same trajectory? But I do think on the other end of that, and so much to unpack here, but I think that our traumas and not just our traumas, the positive experiences as well, kind of forge what that path looks like. Not to say that we don't have control or influence over the direction of our lives and ultimately like what is our destiny, right? But that it's like, I'll use the analogy and the vocabulary around forging, like when you do metalwork, right? And you melt down that silver or that iron or whatever, and it goes into whatever it becomes, right? The crafting of that, you have to take the solid and make it malleable. I think that we do that with our lives and with our experiences and with our traumas. But it can be done over and over again until we can take our experiences from the positive end. We don't have to necessarily go through a painful experience and melt ourselves down and turn into something else. So I think that there's just a lot of room for growth in the industry, but also outside of the industry, that ultimately we can use as a building block to say, okay, I've gotten to this point, using your situation, I'm comfortable. Now I want to do something else. And I have the freedom to do that. And, you know, like you said, that is a privilege that a lot of people don't have. Some people have to do or take or accept, or at least they feel like they do, whatever is given to them. And so stories like yours definitely excite me, and that I've, you know, been able to create a platform or leverage a platform to share stories that encourage other people to realize, like, hey, am I like really doing what I want to do? Am I doing what gives me joy? Am I doing what fills me with passion? And if not, what are the things that I can do to change that? So I have so many things to offer you in that transparency and the raw or the rawness of your experience that you just shared.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and I think we just need to have a complete sea change of what are the things that we value? What are the metrics that we're looking at? Because maybe you're at this same place, but like I'm in this place now where it's like once you really dive into this work, whether it's therapy, financial trauma, your own experiences, or like whether you're reading books that are kind of, you know, about healing and deepening your relationship to the self, you can't unsee certain things. It's like, I look at the financial space now and I'm like, I can't unsee this. Like everyone thinks like, I got this, I got that, I make this much money, I have this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, but then you hear their backstories and you're like, don't you also think this is also a reaction to financial trauma? And obviously we're living in a capitalist society. We're all, you know, under the mercy of living in that world. So we do need to make money. Yes, we need to make a living. So, you know, that's difficult for everyone. But then we assign these metrics of success. Like I have X dollars in the bank. I have X title. I have a car and a house and X, Y, Z. But it's like, are you satisfied? Are you happy? Are you healthy? Do you have free time? Are you giving back to the community? I think there can be so many other metrics that are more meaningful than money, than things, than titles, right? And yeah, I'm just at this point in the financial journey, in the financial space, where obviously I'm still happy and proud for everyone else's success and, you know, what have you, but I just can't see it the same way anymore, even for myself. Like I said, like, obviously I'm proud of the things I've accomplished in this space and I don't regret them, but I'm kind of like, I thought writing a book would make me happy. I thought this would make me happy. And it's like, the happiness was fleeting. So we need to find that deeper, long-lasting contentment. And, you know, if there's anything that I've learned in therapy and life, is we are always changing. As soon as you think you've arrived somewhere, you've changed again. So it's like, I arrived to where I thought I wanted to be. And then of course, now I'm changing again. And that's annoying on one hand, because it's like, wait, I just feel like I've accomplished like what I wanted to get to. But then, you know, we're always evolving and we can't change it. It's like, yeah, just growth is inevitable. Change is inevitable. And we have to figure out how to navigate that with grace and not make money and assets and these certain things the only metric for our success, because that will just lead to so much misery.
Yeah, 100%. And I would echo that. I think, you know, I know from my own experience. I mean, my income this year is a fraction of what my income was in the previous years when I was working for corporate. But I've been talking about this all week. The trade-off for me has been my mental health has improved significantly, probably to the best levels it's been in ever, which I value so much, as mental health is like front and center in a lot of the content that I consume anyway. as you know, we have these conversations, and just becoming aware of the impact of certain environments and circumstances on your mental health, it gives me so much validation in that I made the right decision. But also realizing that I have been able to survive off of the fraction of income that I've made, meaning that I didn't really need all of the money that I was making. And that has been like a mind-blowing experience as well, because certainly you want money, you want to be comfortable and, you know, what have you, but knowing that I could survive off of a fraction of the money that I was making is also very liberating, because it's like, okay, like, what would this look like if I didn't have any debt, or if I didn't have any financial obligations, if I just simply had to exist? And, you know, that tied into my mental health and my happiness is priceless. I mean, it's not something that I would trade on any day, I think. So, yes, we have to take money and assets and wealth off of this pedestal. Let me rephrase that. Wealth in the sense that it's tied into physical or tangible things off this pedestal, and include in the conversations around wealth what mental health looks like, what fulfillment looks like, what passion and purpose looks like, what time looks like for you, and being able to pursue those different things. Because I think what time has afforded me this year is worth more than the income that I've made in previous years, through the relationships that I've established, through the projects that I've initiated, through the creativity and the space to be able to be creative that I've been able to tap into. And to me, that is true wealth.
Yes, your mental health is everything. Everything. Your mental health is so closely related to your physical health. And if you don't have your mental health and or physical health, it's very hard to get anything done. And as someone that has dealt with a physical health issue this year, and my energy was severely compromised, I mean, and that also affected my mental health, like, you realize that there are other important things that are not money related. And there are also certain things in life that money can't solve. And I always think, like, if you have a problem that money can solve, it's so wonderful to just throw money at that problem. Obviously, if you don't have the money to solve that problem, then you have a money problem. But if you have the money to solve problems, then you can focus on the bigger life stuff that money can't solve, because money can't solve certain health issues or diagnoses. Money can't help if someone passes away or divorce or breakups. You know, there are certain pivotal, life-changing, dramatic moments in life where you're just like, I wish money could solve this, right? But it can't. And so having that money can just, I'm throwing it at these problems. I'm going to give myself the time and space to heal the things that money can't solve. And yeah, like, focusing on your mental health is absolutely everything. And if making money or becoming wealthy means abandoning myself, abandoning my mental health, abandoning my values, I don't want it, because that is not the life that is in alignment with my values. Like, do I want to be wealthy? Do I want to be rich? Of course, who doesn't? But I don't want to do that at the expense of my physical health, my mental health, working 18 hours a day, you know, saying yes to everything, you know, saying yes to projects, which I think, you know, aren't in alignment with my values. Like, you know, I think it's really important that we consider all of that.
Absolutely. This has been a phenomenal conversation. And I would love for you to reiterate where you are so people can find you while you're still active in the space, because you may decide that you want to pivot. But tell the people where they can find you, and plug up everything, all of your stuff.
Yes, I am still active for now, and, you know, not making any changes probably anytime soon, but just thinking about it and bringing more transparency to this space. But you can find me at Dear Debt. You can also find me at mentalhealthandwealth.com. You can check out the podcast, The Mental Health and Wealth Show, and my blog, or my book, Dear Debt, on Amazon. You can also Find me on social media at Melanie Lockhart. I'm most active on Instagram and Twitter. And this has been such an amazing conversation. I love what you're doing to bring, you know, more light to this topic, because as someone, as you said, an OG in this space talking about this, like, I love that there are more people talking about this, because I think there should be more people bringing their different perspectives and highlights to these topics, because especially now with everything we've gone through the past few years, we need to be talking about mental health and money, financial trauma, and you are doing such amazing work. So thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here. So this has been another episode of Overcoming Financial Trauma, and I will see you guys in the comments.